Typical of me solving a problem that doesn't exist. I'm in management at work, and that's what we do, as far as I can tell. Welcome, everybody. I am very excited to teach this class. This is the class I would have chosen out of David's series. So much so that I almost feel guilty. So I need your help, because we've got to make the most of this if I'm going to steal this lesson from David. We're in Mark 12, and I'm going to start on verse 13. I know my slide says 14, but it has to start earlier than that. AI picture disclaimer, I'm not an artist, so if there's a picture in here, it's either been stolen or AI has created it. These hands can only destroy. I can't make anything pretty, but I need imagery occasionally, and so I do acquire that or have my AI Denzin make it for me. I'm going to start reading in Mark 12 with 13, and we'll go over this a little bit later, so I'm going to go fairly quickly. And I'm old enough that I learned all this in the King James Version. So I hope you will let me open up the way I study to you, which is with a parallel Bible. So on the right-hand side, hold on a minute.
Make sure I don't lie to you.
Yeah, like I said, on the left-hand side I have ESV, and on the right-hand side I have King James. I really think the King James adds a little to this. There's a reason I've gone to this trouble. Starting with 13. And they sent to him some of the Pharisees and some of the Herodians to trap him in his talk. Oh, I better advance that one. And they came to him and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are true and do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances, but truly teach the way of God. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" But knowing their hypocrisy, he said to them, "Why put me to the test? Bring me a denarius to look at." 16, and they brought him one. And he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said to him, "Caesar's." And Jesus said to them, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they marveled at him. You can see, I think, why I was excited to teach this. This is good. This is great, actually. This is an exciting situation. I've got Pharisees who were trying to do what? What was the goal? Trap Jesus. And they didn't start off by saying, "We're trying to trap you," did they? They started off with flattery. Some of you are a little cynical like me. Keith, I know you are. I always get nervous when people start a conversation with flattery. They're about to ask for something or something like that. I just worry. You know. And Jesus is very interesting. He doesn't appear to take the bait at all. But what I find amazing, and I think is instructive for us as Christians, he has no fear of this snare. He doesn't run in the opposite direction. He gives them a lesson. He answers their question in a very different way than they had expected. And I think his answer resonates for us today. I know it does. And I want us to get into that. So instead of really giving him a conundrum, they thought, trapping him. 12:14, "Teacher, we know that you're true and do not care about anyone's opinion. You're not swayed by appearances, but truly teach the way of God. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" Flattery, warning sign on the flattery. By asking Jesus if it's right to pay Roman taxes, they're trying to get political. And I'm not here to get political tonight, but I will say. I'm not a big fan of mixing politics and Christianity. They're Christianity informs my political outlook, period. Absolutely informs it. But what's happening here? Well, okay, what's happening here? What's the status of the Hebrew nation? Client state, the client state. We can do client state here. We're in the grown-up class. They're conquered. They have a fake government. Yeah, and the some percentage have made a good nest for themselves by carving up spheres of authority with the Romans that the Romans can deal with. Right? What does Rome want? Two things Rome wants from a client state. And I bet you can tell me what they are. Money. Taxes. Money. A.K.A. money. And what do they need for the money to flow and trade to happen and roads to be maintained? They need Pax Romana. You know what Pax Romana is? How is our Latin? Roman peace. Roman peace is a kind of peace that's achieved by killing people who aren't peaceful. and I just say that with no zeal. It just is how it worked. If you breach the peace, it's over for you, because Rome wants peace. And so what's happened is some of the haves have made a deal with the Romans to carve out some authority, and as a part of that deal, Hebrew taxes flow into Roman coffers. And what these nice Pharisees, I don't think they're asking a genuine question at all. I'm just going to say it. This is a question not asked in good faith. Okay? And I, much like the flattery, questions that aren't asked in good faith make the back of my hair on the back of my neck stand up. If Robert said, "Can I borrow your truck?" and I said, "Yes." And I said, "When do you want it?" And he said, "I don't need it." Well, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Will you want me to say no? Do you not need a truck? Did you get a good look at my truck and change your mind? By the way, that actually could happen. It's a Dodge. He might have needed to get where he's going. But this question was not asked in good faith. If Jesus says not to pay the Roman taxes, he's going to upset who? Rome. What happens to people who breach Roman peace? It's bad. It's real bad. It involves being hung up on a thing on the side of the road, probably upside down for most folk. If he does go ahead and say, pay the Roman taxes, what's he saying now? I'm a Roman patsy, no better than these Pharisees who've made their deal with the conquerors, no better than the tax collectors who gobble up that money. He's sending a message to the zealots types: I don't care about you. I'm definitely not the political war type Messiah some of you hope I am. That would be the message, right? So either message that he sends, in their eyes, they've got him. This is, in my opinion, the beginning of gotcha journalism. I know they're not journalists, they're Pharisees, but honestly, a lot of our journalists today aren't journalists. So it works. So this is a road that goes two directions. Whatever Jesus chooses, their plan was to trap him into alienating one group or another. They're trying to slice off half of his popularity. They're trying to cut him down to size so they can deal with him. They're doing to him what I do to a steak. I can't deal with the steak until I get it down into bite-sized portions, and then it's all mine. So they're trying to carve up his popularity. This is terrible. Jesus does not deserve to be treated this way. And as I read the first half of this story, I feel bad for our Lord. And then as I read the rest of the story, I feel a little bit bad for the Pharisees, and I feel a little bit bad for myself, and I'm going to explain that in a moment. Put a pin in that. But it was a trap. It was not a question. 12:15, but knowing their hypocrisy, why put me to the test? Bring me a denarius, and let me look at it. Who thinks that Jesus didn't know what a denarius looks like? Anyone? No. Jesus is part of the Godhead. There's not a mystery to any object on the face of the earth. But he asked for one, which I find interesting. 16. And they brought him one, and he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said unto him, "Caesar's." So, because Jesus knows exactly what a Roman coin looks like, what's he doing? Why bring me one? Yeah. They're part of the journey now. It's a visual aid, but it's also a tactile aid, really, right? Someone had to fish a denarius up out of there. And please, this is my AI Roman coin, so don't anybody put that into your Google Translate from Latin, because I don't know what it says. He wants to make a point that will not be forgotten. How did the image of the emperor get on this coin? Engraved. Yes. I'm going to say struck, right? And I'm splitting hairs with you, Mr. Stewart, but two bald men split hairs. There's a joke in there somewhere, but let me let that go. They heat up the coin close to its melting point, but not quite, and then they put it under a stamp, and they strike it, literally. And so we say coins are struck, especially coins of this era. And it does engrave them, but it just engraves them all at once really fast, right? And hence you have the kind of smudgy around the edges of ancient coins, and sometimes they're not, the two faces aren't parallel to each other. The two planes are not coplanar. Mrs. Neidhofer taught me this, and I'm afraid I'm forgotten it all now. They're not coplanar because of the how it was all done. But everybody who makes a coin is a servant of the emperor. And in those days, every coin made had some likeness of a kingdom or a king. And you have to be careful what you do with that money. There's probably not much more than 11 bucks in my pocket right now. But if I were to take it out and set it on fire, I'd actually be violating one or more laws. Right? Even if I was cold, you can't burn a dollar. It's not worth what it used to be. Let's be candid. You can't burn a dollar. Right? Why not? Yes. Pennies that are really copper are actually, for a while now, have been worth more than that much copper. Right? Pennies are, old, newer pennies have a lot of zinc in them. But the older ones that are mostly copper, theirs has been for, I think one copper was $14 an ounce, and I'm a copper man, so it would have been 2014-ish. Pennies were worth more for their copper than a penny. So I could start a scheme to melt down pennies, but it'd be illegal. And not because, for reasons that a government needs a currency, for Pax Romana reasons, for American commerce reasons in the same way. Now, I'm not saying that our government's no better than Rome. Please don't misunderstand me. I love America. I love her dearly. But we also don't want people to be defacing our currency. And we also put a lot of American imagery on our currency. What are some things that are on all of our currency that you can think of? Or most of them? Yes? Presidents? Images of presidents? E pluribus unum? We were doing some Latin earlier. Who can do E pluribus unum for me? Someone educated. You're going to have to. Yeah, well. Yeah.
When I see a penny on the ground, I always pick it up and I say to myself, "In God we trust."
In God we trust, when you see a penny on the ground and pick it up. Daryl, if I could reach the ground reliably and get back up, I would pick up pennies. I mean, I'm cheap enough to pick up pennies. It's so far down there. Just so far down there. If I had a walking stick and some gum, I could get them. I'll tell you my strategy later. That's probably not for everybody. So the emperor made those coins, and lent his image to them. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that. His image was lent to the coin. Okay, 17. Jesus said to them, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they marveled at him. What's Jesus saying here? He kind of told them to pay those taxes, didn't he? But he did it in such a way that he answered more than they asked. Do you ever see a politician get asked a really simple gotcha question and they give a 10-minute answer? Because they don't want to say, yes, capital gains tax is good. They want to talk about the larger context. Well, Jesus is no politician, but he is really bringing us a larger context here. And it's a context I hope we don't miss. In the first half of Jesus' answer, the coin is the coin. And it has Caesar's image on it. Do you agree with me to that? In the second half of Jesus' answer, what's the coin? Who? Maybe who's the coin? Jessica says she's the coin. Bless you, sister. I think we're the coin. I think maybe, I'm getting metaphysical here, so go with me on a journey, right? Maybe our soul is the coin. Whose image was man made in? In God's image. And do we see that sometimes? When I see Marlena picking up a little one, I see a divine love for life and nurture, right? Do you see what I see? When I see Erlene hosting and opening up her home and spending of her time to create a comfortable environment for somebody, what used to be common manners but are so scarce today, I see something divine. Do you guys see that sometimes in each other? Are you able to catch each other in the right light and see a little bit? We're not God. We're not little gods. And we're not on a journey to become God. Don't mistake me. But the imprint of God is upon us. And I think we do ourselves credit when we allow that image to be seen, when we act in such a way that we're congruent with God. And I think that's what Jesus means when he says, render unto God the things that are God's. Will you go with me that far? All right, now I'm going to jump off the deep end. So what is the imprint on your soul? What does it say? And this is a purple fake wax seal. Do not try to translate that Hebrew. AI is very bad at Hebrew script, it turns out. It looked a lot like Farsi. And I don't want to cause a jihad. So I had to keep hitting reroll to get it more Hebrew-y and less Arabic. But here we are. This is what we've got. So if this was a royal wax seal and it was on your soul, never mind why my soul looks crusty and brown. That could be a problem with me. What would the image say? Someone said, "Child of God, thank you for the grace you gave me there." That's what it should say. Did anybody ever have their mother put their name in their clothing? I won't say what articles, to ensure that they came back from camp practice. Football camp or other, what was your mother trying to do? What was she doing with that label? What's that? Yeah, she was trying to control the spend of a reckless teenager who couldn't be bothered where his like ran off and left his phone, you know? I love Keith. She was exerting control. I will tell you guys right now that I do a lot of labeling of things in my shop. drawers and bins and buckets and baskets. I have a good-sized workshop, and I label the Vidmar cabinets. I have these big industrial Vidmar cabinets full of tools and tooling and obscure bizarre tools and strange old tools and new and 200-year-old tools, and I'm endeavoring to label them all because it's my way of controlling what's a chaotic environment. And if the truth be told, I remember my father, when dementia struck, not really being able to remember where things were. And in my mind, I'm going to somehow control the world with that label. And my labeling is just about as effective as your mother's attempt to write your name in your waistband was. It's kind of ridiculous. But God's image that he's lent to us, God's property of sticker or wax seal or imprint or impression, that's very serious and it's quite effective. And if we'll remember, I think it would change the way we behave. Hold on, don't do that. I want you to go forward. Labeling is naming. Labeling and naming is controlling. Right? U.S. Army field rations. Property of U.S. Army. I grew up with stacks of those. These aren't MREs. This is the... Anyone old enough to remember K rations? Bruce? Yeah, no comment on your age. But yes. MREs look like a banquet compared to that stuff. Or C rations. Anyone ever have a key ring full of keys that said do not duplicate because you had a trusted position at a organization or institution? Anyone ever monogrammed their shirts with a little if found? This is a library sticker, ex libris, library of, Roy. All these are things that we put a label on because we're marking it as our own. We're exercising our influence and we're trying to change something about how it behaves or how it's used. I loaned Tom and Cindy Johnson 3 books a week ago. Right now, just about this exact hour, I loaned them 3 books. Not a day has gone by this week that I haven't thought about those books. And Tom and Cindy Johnson are the most reliable people I know, nearly. Save other people in this room, they're at the top of the list. But I still, in my mind, am running a subroutine the whole time. They have those books of mine. They've got those books. Jesus is reminding the Pharisees, and really us, that we're God's own. Instead of trapping Christ, the Pharisees got a great lesson. And that's what I find interesting about the trap. Jesus saw it was a trap. He knew it was hypocrites saying things they didn't believe in order to elicit a certain response from him. He gave them maybe one of the responses they'd hoped for, but then he gave them a lot more. We owe God fealty. Any arguments? Worship, devotion, love, attention, service. We could go on. And we don't need to, as long as we all agree that's what we owe God. As a tradesman who profits under Pax Romana is expected to pay a tax to Rome, so is a human made in the image of God expected to pay homage to God. Or homage? 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 Is it French homage and English is homage? Okay. Do you think that's a reasonable expectation? Someone argue with me on that point, if you will. Who's a harsher master, Rome or the Lord God Almighty? I would submit Rome was a terrible master. Unreliable, fickle. Emperor A would do this, Emperor B would reverse course and do that. Scary. We serve a God who does not change. We serve a God who has never changed. And in fact, perfected the law so that he could reach out to us when it turns out we were not that good at keeping the law as it stood. And so what Jesus told those Pharisees, I really also think he's telling us. And you guys know, you've been in class with me before. Some things are letters to that person in that time. Some things are stories for that group and that opportunity. I think this is one of those stories that stands tall and is applicable to us today. Why are you worried about paying your taxes? A few denarii, a little money. What 10%? Is that what they're dealing with? By the way, this is a great day to talk taxes. Anybody pay 10% tax or less? Yeah, let's get together and complain later about that. And I will give my sermon against the alternative minimum tax sometime. It's not religious, but so that's the only reason I haven't given it yet. But 10%'s money. But Jesus' question is, give it to Caesar because his image is on it and he struck it and he created it. He's the author and the owner of it and you're using it, to Stephen's point earlier. You don't own that coin. But by the way, whose image are you struck in? Whose name's on your soul? Who do you owe loyalty and fealty? And that's what the world that Jesus is opening up. And I really think David left me a wonderful lesson. And David, I, if you're watching, I hope I did justice. So here's my summary. Trying to chap Jesus is just unwise. I mean, that's just easy. Trying to use politics to settle a religious dispute might not work out the way you expected, right? Jesus transcends their political difficulties of the time in the same way that he transcends our political difficulties today. What political party would Jesus register as, right? That could be a lesson I have, and I try to get you to convince one way or the other. What a waste of all our times. Jesus is looking at things that are much bigger than that. Assuming that you are in a righteous position due to your position, your bloodline, or your strict adherence to rules is almost always a mistake. I have the moral high ground. I'm going to go in for the kill. If this is what's happening in your brain, stop. But that's where I think these Pharisees thought they were. We've got him here. Either way he answers, he's going to lose the zealots or he's going to lose the Romans and the government will take care of him for us. Or we'll throw him out because he's a Roman lover. Probably a horrible mistake when you assume that you're operating in your own righteousness, which the Pharisees did. Any righteousness we have is on loan from God. And it's not to be used to belittle others or to win petty human arguments. And I think you guys know that because you treat each other so well all the time. And I'll be perfectly honest with you. There are few topics in here that we're in absolute 100% agreement on. And I don't say that lightly. Randy and I were having a conversation a week or two ago about, in order to have a conversation about a point of scripture that we disagree on, we probably had to agree on 1,000 or 10,000 things to get to the point where we have that conversation, right? How much did we agree on before we got there? And if we will just have a little grace with each other, and this is grace that the Pharisees didn't show Jesus, and if we will just speak with each other in good faith, not the bad faith that question was asking, or when Robert tried to borrow my truck. He did not. He did not try to borrow my truck. But if we will just treat each other in good faith and with grace, I really think we will show that side of the spiritual coin, show the image of God that's been imprinted on us, because we truly are his. And he truly does love us and wants us to thrive. And I think treating one another excellently is a good way to get that started. Comments? I've got 4 minutes. Jaeger, this is the point where Jaeger usually comes in and causes all kinds of trouble. Yeah. Mr. Lingle, sir.
So I used the word engraved differently.
Yes.
Coins are engraved. And the word engraved is carved and moved. Which, if you think of wood or stone, it's easy to take a chisel.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Even if you have harder metal, carve something as intricate as a coin.
Yeah.
You get one bit. Strike,
yes.
But it's still engraving. And it's important because Jesus doesn't ask for the denarius for just the ear. It's an image of the emperor.
Right.
Revered as a god. It's a graven image that he is rebuking the godless ruling.
Right. Yeah, no, and I'm okay with your. It's can we agree that it's displacement? Okay, and I'm okay with the verbiage of engrave. I yes. Yeah. All right. I'm good. And graven image being a bad thing in religious connotations. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. I see why you used engrave. Okay. All right. And any other comment? That was good. Did Jaeger come in? Did I miss him? Or was that just Randy Brown? I'm so disappointed. I mean, hey, Randy. They both have a red shirt on. And your peripheral vision, it's hard to tell one from the other. Any other comments? Well, thank you guys for your kind attention. I think I'll give you 2 minutes back. And I appreciate y'all, especially the help with the Latin and the definitions. Sorry that I had to give Keith his phone, even though he was coming back for it and I didn't get started on time. You are dismissed.